Welcome to the Hot Hot Hoops Triple H podcast. I'm your host, Hayley Burns. Today with me, we have a special guest on the show. It is Sergio Fernandez. He is the editor of HotHotHoops.com and he also writes for FoxSportsFlorida.com. Welcome, Sergio. How's it going?
I'm doing great, thanks. I'm looking forward to being on the new podcast.
Yeah, and with us today is fellow writer David Ramil.
How are you?
I'm good. How are we feeling? Times of late, we haven't spoken since last year, and this year we're now well into January, and I kind of feel perhaps we're still maybe going to be talking about the same things.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of the same patterns taking place with the Heat this year, and I don't think that they've shaken free of that completely. But although there is some bright side to what's been going on over the last few games, and I'm sure that we'll get to that eventually.
I'm sure we will. And I think bright side even rhymes with the person we might even be talking about. But we'll start with you, Sergio. We'll just check your brain here. What for you? I mean, you spent all those years alongside LeBron at the arena day in, day out. And for you, being there a good 2.5 months now without that aura of him around, without that winning feeling, what has the feeling been like for you this season?
I think players like Bosch are frustrated. I think they've tried to keep their spirits up. But the losses have obviously worn them down. And I think some of it is explainable. Some of it is, you know, understandable. But then there's other things like inconsistent play, especially in the third quarter and down the stretch of games that are inexcusable for a team that still has a lot of playoff experience, still has a lot of winning experience, really. I mean, you're talking about two point guards in Chalmers and Cole that have done nothing but win these last 4 years, basically, and they look really out of sorts a lot of times. And that doesn't help kind of mesh the whole team together. So I think individually the players, you know, I think some of the veterans, maybe not, they're not in panic mode. I wouldn't say that either, but at the same time, there are teams behind them in the standings that are improving their play and they've got to get their act together. There's still a lot of work to be done.
I was wondering because I saw a recent, interview he did with Ira Winterman, and one of the comments that I took from that was that, you know, when asked what the reason for this season's, you know, struggles have been, Bosch responded somewhat curtly, you know, saying that's not my job, and I guess he kind of put the focus back on Spoelstra. Is there any kind of internal criticism? I guess they're not going to voice it because I think they're a little bit more. I guess they're familiar with how the media works. Obviously, they've been under so much scrutiny during the Big Three era. But do you get a sense that there's any kind of frustration with the coaching staff and you know the kind of decisions they've made of late?
No, not really. But we also have to realize that if they really did, probably wouldn't know about it unless your star player openly questions your coach repeatedly over the course of the season to the media, then maybe. But I haven't really caught that from Bosch or Wade or Deng, any of those players. And I don't think a lot of it really falls on Spoelstra. I think when it's a start like this, where you're, you know, several games below 500, I don't think it's one factor. I wouldn't put it all on Spoelstra, nor would I put it all on the injuries or on one specific factor. I think it's all come together. That's why sometimes they look pretty good. They have, you know, a good game against the Clippers or against the Mavericks. And then there's other times where you can't believe that they lost to the 76ers at home after giving up a huge lead.
It was only 4 days away. Wade kind of said the Heat can't afford to get behind because they're still lacking that togetherness. That togetherness being that cohesiveness and trusting each other and knowing what to do in those dire positions. What did we take away from that kind of comment?
I believe it as well. I think just the team needs to really be able to have a consistent starting lineup, somewhat of a consistent rotation. I don't see any problem with trying out a James Ennis, for example, and then giving maybe Sean Williams some more time and kind of rotating through that because you don't want to burn a player either. So you need to kind of spread that out, and they have players on the bench that have similar, you know, skill levels. I would say that it wouldn't be that much of a stretch to put in James Ennis for a few minutes to see what he can do. I think that's really what has been one of the issues for the Heat, is just that inconsistency with not just their play, but also the rotations and those lineups, and really just finding a way to make it work with new teammates like Lowell Deng and see what Danny Granger really has left in the tank. Unfortunately, Josh McRoberts is out, but he was a huge piece to that as well. Just in those few games where he was playing with Bosch and Wade, you could see that there was something there, and you hope that they can build off that in the next season.
Have they given any kind of sign as to how they might want to incorporate Whiteside further into the season? Because we've already seen him used differently as far as, you know, when they put him into the game. He was the first guy subbed in against the Clippers, and then, you know, obviously there was the whole debacle in the third quarter against the Trailblazers where, you know, Spoelstra stubbornly hung on to Anderson even as he was getting roasted by, you know, inexplicably getting roasted by Chris Kaman. You know, he turned it around. To his credit, he was a lot more flexible against the Clippers. He realized that Whiteside was a difference. Do you think there's any kind of buzz about whether or not they want to start Whiteside, or, you know, similarly to what they did against the Clippers, will they bring him in on the third quarter, or is it a game-to-game situation?
That's the Spoelstra style. He's going to be – he's not going to tip his hat on something like that. He just – he never will. Even if there's somebody that's questionable or probable for the game, he won't tell you during shoot-around or even right before the game. He'll just say, you know, they're getting treatment right now. We'll see. And that's how he is with rotations. This is his style. So there's no buzz, at least internally, as far as what Whiteside's role is going to be. I personally don't anticipate him being a starter just yet. But you know, actually, in Birdman's defense, I think he actually has played well in spurts. I just don't think that he can sustain a starting role and playing 25, 30 minutes a night. I don't think that's good for a 36-year-old center that's banging down low. We saw, obviously, like you said, against the Blazers, what happened. And I think Spoelstra has shown that he can be flexible and he's open to certain ideas. I think just maybe within a game plan, I don't think he's going to throw that all away at, you know, all of a sudden. But some coaches do that. You know, some coaches ride the hot hand, and maybe they would have done that. And I can understand why he fans were a little frustrated that he didn't play. I don't even know if he really played in the second half against the Blazers, or maybe like during garbage time. But other than that, yeah, I think he should have had a bigger role. But let's not forget that he just signed to the Heat maybe a little bit more than a month ago. So when they did sign him, Spoelstra did talk about him as a developmental player, as somebody that they were going to bring along, somebody that they had already sent to the Skyforce, however briefly that was. So I don't think any of this was really according to plan, but I think they're pretty happy with the results.
Do we think there's anything in the rumor, or there's any real worth of having Chris Anderson on the trading block?
Hey, that's a tough one. I don't know what David thinks, but that he's one of the few trade assets. I see it, but just now they're starting to look like a team that has a little bit of decent size inside, and that's something that you really need.
Yeah, I agree. I think the way that they've used Anderson and Whiteside, they're kind of you know, Whiteside I think has a little bit more upside, you know, as far as the way he catches the ball, etc. But so as far as Anderson's concerned, I think, you know, he's being utilized very well right now. You know, him and Whiteside give a very good 1-2 punch as far as having a center in there who can, you know, effectively run the pick and roll, which has been a big part of the Heat offense over the last few games. And, you know, the fact that Whiteside has been as promising as he has, I think, has been set up by the way that they used Anderson early to start games. So I'd also think it's a little bit against Heat policy. I know that Pat Riley tends to, you know, make big moves every once in a while, and you know, certainly that's been his reputation over the course of his career with Miami, but I don't think trading away a guy as popular as Anderson is going to be a very, you know, popular move with the Heat fan base. So I don't see that they could get a lot for somebody like Anderson, first and foremost. I don't think it's a good move just to ship him just for the sake of clearing a roster cap space there, or, you know, make a roster space and bringing in somebody that might not necessarily fit in the short term. So you have to look at all the variables, and I don't see Anderson being moved anytime soon. I think he's a good part of what Miami's doing this season. He fits nicely. He's experienced with the team, and his popularity with the fan base all play a part there. So I'd expect him to be here with at least throughout the rest of his contract.
Okay, so I know we talk about this a lot, but reality is right now, who do you think really should be the starting lineup for Miami?
You know, I don't mind it for now, what they're doing now. They're just trying to create a little bit of stability, and there really isn't much else to go with as far as what to do with that power position. Because I like Chris Bosch in that power forward spot. I think that's where he thrives. It's where he's most comfortable at. I think if he's going to be the focal part of the offense along with Wade, he should play the position that he's most comfortable with. And with Whiteside's emergence, gives you that instant production off the bench. I don't know if he's going to be the first guy off the bench every game like he was the last game against the Clippers. But so far, it's worked. They've improved. They really just need to... really, the first halves of games, they play well. They're at least competitive. They're not down by double digits lately or anything like that. It's really that second half. I couldn't pinpoint exactly the cause behind that, but I don't think it's because of the starting lineup.
Yeah, I'd agree there. I think that clearly this is the best lineup. And you know, as you mentioned, Surya, if they're looking for stability, I don't see any reason why they would change that, especially when they have an all-star talent like Bosch, who's thriving at the power forward position, his natural place. So I think it's a good lineup. You know, you've got a pretty well-rounded, much more traditional lineup than you have had over the big three era, and that's fine. I think it's working. And you know, like you said, it's the first half isn't the issue. It's the second half, and that's just a whole other, you know, mystery of the universe there. I don't know how we're ever going to figure that one out. But it brings up another question, though, that I was wondering, you know, with the whole point guard spot, I think Chalmers is still probably the best option at the point, but What's been the issue with Napier? The way that they've called him up, sent him down, called him back up again, and the fact that he's just not getting any playing time at all. Is there something internal there that he's just not getting the system? Is it that they don't trust his talent? Or is he just in the doghouse that we've seen maybe Michael Beasley be in over the last couple of years?
Yeah, that's a tough one because, you know, on one hand you can see that, okay, he's a rookie point guard. He has to learn the ropes, that whole adjustment to playing so many games as a you know the road schedule during the big three era. I could understand that why this approach is continuing with Napier, especially like you say with that point guard issue with both Chalmers and Cole. Neither one of them really has really taken advantage of that starting opportunity. And what's even more confusing is also the fact that Napier actually played well during the preseason.
Right.
He was playing a lot of minutes in the fourth quarter early in the season. And that team was the same team that won five of their first seven games and looked pretty decent, even though they were already hit with the injuries. Josh McRoberts still hadn't really played, and Danny Granger hadn't played either. It is confusing. He will definitely get minutes with the Skyforce, but I don't really know if that's really the issue there because, like you said, I mean, I really don't see why he couldn't have earned minutes already with the team just to see what he's got. Even in a second quarter, it doesn't necessarily have to be in the fourth quarter or major minutes.
Yeah, but just to not be getting any,
and also they've let go of Shannon Brown and now Andrew Dawkins. So just now they signed Tyler Johnson ostensibly to back up Dwayne Wade, but they're not really doing that either. They're kind of using Chalmers as that combo guard. Sometimes they play Cole and Chalmers together. So there are minutes there that could be carved out for Napier. We'll just see how it goes in the near future because he is back with the team.
I was going to ask you both, what did you make of the Tyler Johnson signing? What did you think, Surya?
I thought I could see it coming. I didn't see any veterans right away that are available that could immediately help the Heat. He's been in the system since the summer league. He played well in one preseason game against the Spurs, but I don't really know if that's indicative of anything. Mm. But he can shoot. He's got a bit of a more complete game than Dawkins. I don't see any problem with having some extra athleticism and energy off the bench. We'll just see if he has any playing time in these 10 days or if he can sign another contract and stick around. I think they still want that roster flexibility, so you might see him play 10 days here and then maybe go back to Skyforce and rejoin the Heat at a later time. So I don't know if this particular time is his time for being in that rotation, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize how good he had been shooting with his Skyforce. I think he'd been shooting in the mid-40s, if I'm not mistaken, as far as three-point range is concerned. And that was a lot more impressive than what I'd remembered you know, during summer camp, he wasn't much of a shooter. I guess he was just basically called on to provide, like you said, a little athleticism, a little explosive ability at the two guard there. I think I'd heard that they were looking to use Johnson maybe as a backup point guard, which, you know, that brings up another point. You know, what are they going to do with Napier then if they've got this guy Johnson who could come in and basically play either point or two guard? You know, obviously, I think his natural fit is backing up Wade there. But, you know, they've got Ennis, and that's how they've been using Ennis as well as Wade's backup. He's been getting some minutes in there. So, I mean, I have to agree with you, Surya. I just don't see how he's going to get a lot of time there. But, you know, it's a good move. I guess they want to keep guys that they've got in the you know, D-League farm system. They want to keep them close to the vest, have them called up every once in a while the way they did with Dawkins, and just see what they can offer to the team. So, I guess it was either that or maybe bring in Kem Birch, and with the emergence of Whiteside, that didn't seem to be as big a necessity. So, you know, we'll see what happens. If he can get some playing time, you know, I would imagine, you know, with upcoming games against, you know, say the Golden State Warriors, games that would probably be very difficult for Miami to win just because of the strength there of that team overall, maybe you'd get a couple of minutes here and there for Johnson towards the end of the game.
Are you talking about garbage time?
Yes, I was.
Is that what you're implying?
Well, I mean, that seems like a very tough victory for Miami, especially at Golden State on a back-to-back after facing the Lakers tonight. That just seems like a really tough challenge from any team, much less you know, a team like Miami that struggles in the second half.
We went okay against them when they were here, didn't we, if my memory recalls?
Yeah, but I mean, again, that's a home game here against Golden State is one thing. Even though, you know, obviously the American Airlines Arena hasn't been the friendly confines everybody expected it to be. I think that, you know, maybe that's another question, Surya, that you can provide some enlightenment there, because, you know, that 7-game homestand, I had hoped, and I think a lot of the fans did, that, you know, maybe with between the injuries being an issue early on and then the tough back-to-backs, a lot of road games, et cetera, you look at that 7-game homestand leading up to Christmas Day and the matchup of LeBron James, and you're thinking, this is it. This is where Miami's going to finally take a stand and really turn their season around. Instead, they drop that game to the 76ers. They go 2-5 overall. And if not for that victory against the Cavaliers, I think a lot of fans would probably have thrown in the towel on the season. But that might have been just enough of an emotional boost to say, well, maybe there's some hope there for the season. Did the team just kind of, I mean, did they ever lose hope during that, you know, 7-game stretch? Because you would think that they could have just done something differently, but I don't know what happened there. They just kind of fell apart.
Right, and I think Wade alluded to that right before they were about to leave on that road trip. Then they were kind of looking forward to being away, to being together
as a team. Getting away from you guys.
right. But some of them do join them on the trip. But yeah, I think Wade was talking a little bit about that, about the pressure of winning at home versus just playing on the road and just focusing on basketball. I think maybe that got to them because it was such a long homestand that I think they did kind of feel that pressure. I don't know if that's the best excuse or reasoning behind it, but I do think that it was a lost opportunity. I think it was almost 2 weeks, really. They didn't have to travel. They could just concentrate on practicing, refining. But that didn't really happen. And yeah, there was obviously that 76ers victory was confounding. But then you also have like a game like against the Cavaliers where they play good. So I think that's also the frustrating thing about it, is that they can play good like that, or against the Clippers as well. It's just how to sustain it through 48 minutes. I don't know why they struggle at home, and I don't know why they struggle in the second half of games.
We haven't spoken much since Danny Granger found some momentum over those few weeks across Christmas there. How have you found him as of late, like around the team and his, you know, and in practice? Has he been practicing much? Because he's gone a bit quiet again, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's just he's not going to be the Danny Granger, you know, of his all-star past. Maybe at least not now, as far as his mobility goes. He's going to be just kind of like that guy that can be a spot-up shooter. You know, brings a little bit of size and strength, but mostly somebody that's going to be an outside shooter. So really, his games are really going to kind of fluctuate based on his shooting touch. He came on pretty strong for a stretch of a few games during that homestand, and now he's kind of tail it off a little bit, but that's really the number one kind of production he's going to get to that he the, his shooting touch. And as far as his practices and his warm ups go, he seems to always be one of the people that are, you know, the first Heat players there and one of the last to leave. It's kind of a cliche, but as far as where I see him, he's always around there. He's always working hard. I don't see him being, you know, particularly limited in practice or sitting out. You know, we don't really get a whole lot of time to watch practice, but when he's there, he's there. I really don't think it's that. I think it's just really staying healthy is really the number one thing for him. And if he can bring, you know, some decent production off some limited minutes off the bench, I think that's the ideal situation for him. I don't think playing more than 20, 25 minutes in a big role is good for him or his knees.
Do we think Whiteside has kind of put a stop to the Justin Hamilton experience earlier on in the season? Do you think Justin's sitting there just going, damn?
Well, I mean, if you put the two of them together, you compare, you know, their games, Justin Hamilton is not that complete solution that the promise of Whiteside can bring to the Heat, because Whiteside, I think you know, to be a 7-footer, to be athletic, you're going to block some shots, you're going to grab some rebounds, but you might expect that player to have limited post-up abilities, not really be able to have good hands around the rim. I think that's been the downfall of many of the Heat centers since Shaquille O'Neal and Alonzo Mourning, to be honest. They're not big four. Big three era, there was never really a player like that could impact the team on both ends of the floor. So you've had that in these, you know, past few games with Whiteside, and that's a huge upgrade over Hamilton or anybody else that the Heat have brought in.
Absolutely. We should talk about him a bit more, because I'm sure you're frothing over him, David. How have you found Whiteside's inclusion these past few weeks, and what the numbers he's been putting up and what he's been producing for us? Like, it's just so exciting to actually see like a big man on the court for us.
Yeah, I think he's been sensational. I mean, I kind of feel like we should temper it a little bit, just because we don't know exactly, you know, how he's going to remain consistent. But it's hard not to get caught up in the whole, you know, Hassanity or whatever it is that people are calling it. It's just really exciting. I think, you know, it does bring up a lot of those memories of having a quality big man that, you know, Miami hasn't had in almost a decade. It's been a long time, and it's just the way he's been able to do everything as effectively as he has. I mentioned how he's been able to thrive in the whole pick and roll, but it only works if he's able to, you know, like Surya pointed out, corral the ball. His hands, his ability to catch at the rim and finish in traffic has been extraordinary. I don't think anybody expected him to be that kind of a polished, well-developed player. And you look at a guy who struggled the way he has to even make it into the league. He hinted at it after the Clippers game that he's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulders there. But, I mean, he whatever it is that's motivating him, hell, I hope it continues to do so throughout the rest of his tenure with Miami, because he's looked really, really great. And not only that, but you look at his overall impact, not just defensively, which is huge, but offensively, he frees up the rest of the game for everybody else. And you saw that against the Clippers, where, you know, you have DeAndre Jordan all of a sudden lagging off of Whiteside a little bit, and he's trying to push, you know, the ball handler. A lot of the times it was Wade, and he collapses on Wade along with another defender, J.J. Redick, most often the case. And then you have to bring in somebody like, you know, Matt Barnes to come in and try and guard Whiteside. That's obviously a mismatch. And it just forces the whole defense to shift around. I think we'll see more of that against the Lakers. It'll be interesting to see, once teams finally scout Whiteside effectively, how he matures and develops the next step. You know, we've seen some progress. I want to see him be able to sustain it for a long time. And then, you know, once those double team situations come, will he be able to pass out of that effectively and still free up the rest of the offense so that maybe it can, you know, we can benefit from it along the perimeter as well?
Yeah, to go along with what David was saying, yeah, I noticed the same thing as far as his impact on offense. I really like the way they can really just throw the ball into the paint. He just does something with it. And that's something, yeah, like David was saying, that we haven't seen in years, that somebody could have and different post-up moves too. And I really liked it in the third quarter against the Clippers, where he got blocked by Jordan.
Right. With,
I believe, his right hand. And then he, you know, no fear. He just caught the ball, did a little 180, and he finished with his left hand. And I was looking at the highlights that are on HotOnHoops.com of his game, and the Clippers announcers, they couldn't believe what they were seeing. They're like, who is this guy? Where did he come from? And how is he doing this to Jordan? And yeah, it's a profound impact on both ends of the floor. And yeah, just the rebound, he's just collecting all of them. He's a magnet to the ball, and it's very obvious when he comes into the game. What can he do? And just looking up down the future, I don't think obviously he can sustain 20 plus points, 10 plus points per 10 plus rebounds per game, but anything that he can provide is a huge boost for the Heat off the bench in that position of need. So even if he just scores 6 or 7 points, but he's a presence in the paint and he's a threat in the paint, that opens up so much for the Heat.
What's exciting, I know it's a bit down the road because it is a week away. We still have tonight the Lakers, the Warriors, then we've got the Kings on Friday. But having him back here in Miami next Tuesday against Ibaka and big man's, you know, my big man, Stephen Adams, OKC, you're going to be in here in Miami. That's going to be a great test to see Hassan against those guys.
Well, I think he'll get a better challenge probably against the Kings. I mean, he should get some minutes there against DeMarcus Cousins, who's arguably the most skilled big man in the league at this point. So, I mean, I guess you'd have to put him up there along with Gasol and maybe Joaquin Noah. But, I mean, that's a tough matchup for him. I mean, obviously, you'll probably get Anderson going up against him as a starter, but it should be a handful for the young kid. And
to be, you know, games for him, for sure.
Yeah, and in the fact that he started off with Sacramento, I mean, that's where he got his career started. Maybe he wants to go and show the team that they let go of him a little too early. You know, like the way he indicated, you know, he seemed genuinely angry against Doc Rivers and the Clippers for not giving him an opportunity, you know, a tryout earlier this season after he got waived by Memphis. And so he seems also very appreciative of the opportunity that Miami has given him. So we'll see how he bounces back and is able to continue proving the rest of the league that they made a mistake.
I think that's a big thing for him as well, is that he had his time in the NBA. He, you know, he was out of it. He had to go play basketball in Lebanon. He's known what it's like to sit back and you know, watch your dream from afar. So I feel like he has a lot more appreciation for it. And, you know, I think he seems headstrong and mentally right for the NBA now at 25 years old.
Can I ask a quick question? Like, how's he been able to mesh into the whole locker room? Because he's still, you know, relatively an unknown person there as far as, you know, he doesn't have a lot of NBA experience, but he's thrived so quickly. How is he able to mesh there? Do you see any tension as far as him and Anderson regarding who starts? I don't get that vibe from Chris Anderson, but, you know, the rest of the players, you know, namely Bosch and Wade, they seem to be talking up Whiteside a lot. You got Udonis Haslam making comparisons to, you know, DeAndre Jordan, ironically enough, and Alonzo Mourning, and they're you know, that's the ceiling that they're putting for this kid. How's he been able to fit into the whole locker room there?
Well, I think Wade and Bosch have been talking him up because the press have not stopped asking about him.
Right.
Because there's been a lot of hype as far as these last few practices in Miami before they left for the road trip. But, you know, he's a quiet guy. He's very reserved. But, he'll talk, definitely. When he said that about Doc Rivers, I was a little surprised. But, you know, it kind of answered a little bit as far as, you know, that kind of game, where he got it from. But I think, you know, I think they're bringing him along at a pace that they thought was going to be the right pace. So we'll see how these games have changed. But I think, David, you alluded to this too. Like, we can't project too much because there is such a small sample size. And I think veterans like Bosch and Wade are happy that he's helping so much, but that's not really the focus right now. To see how we can incorporate Whiteside the best way into our system. I think the focus remains on how do we improve overall the team, and certainly we've been talking about the second half performances. I think that's really the focus, and really Bosch and Wade, they played well individually, but you know, they still need to lead this team. They still need to get their teammates more involved instead of playing too much hero ball. So as well, they also have to look into themselves as well and improve the team as a whole. So I think there's a lot of things going on right now. Whiteside is certainly an interesting, fascinating part to this puzzle right now. But yeah, I think over time we'll have a better understanding of his importance to the team.
Before we wrap up, I want to ask you: did you think that there was any relevance to those Deng rumors, those Memphis rumors at the time? What do you think?
Yeah,
think it was something they looked into?
Definitely from the Grizzly side, I think they were shopping around. They were looking for help. And you know, that's what they do. They put out phone calls. They say, hey, you know, we're interested in this player. What do you think? And maybe, you know, I can imagine Riley, you know, saying, no, we're not sellers. We're buyers, if anything, in this free agent market. And I think they went on and they found their guy in Jeff Green, a team like the Celtics that doesn't really seem to be gunning for the playoffs. I think they're content with stockpiling assets for the future. I think it's a decent enough plan. It's been paying off for teams, young teams in the East, like the Raptors and the Wizards, just, you know, taking their time to improve their team slowly. But the Heat are not like that. They've made that very clear with their Heat Lifer videos and all that. They want to win now. They're not getting rid of somebody that they just signed to a contract and with a team that really hasn't had.
Oh, he's gone again. Wow. But at least he finished his sentence. We'll start wrapping up when he gets back, if there's anything you want to lastly put to him.
Okay.
I'll try and call him. Are you there?
Hello?
Yeah. That's okay. At least you finished your sentence then before you got out.
What was it that I was saying?
I don't know. That's okay. We'll wrap up. We'll start to wrap up now. So okay. Finish what you're saying and then Davey can say something and then we'll just...
What the hell?
That was good. You finished. You were just saying how.
I think you were talking about how they're stockpiling draft picks and they're building slowly as opposed to what the Heat is doing. They're going to win now, etc.
Okay, right. So yeah, I think that the overall goal of the Heat remains the same despite a slow start to the season. I see them, if anything, trying to add a missing piece to the puzzle or two. Who knows? But for now, I think they just have to stick with what they have. And maybe they'll be a little bit more active by the trade deadline.
I just wanted one thing, you know, I joked about it earlier, but I think that, you know, it's great to see that now the 2016 plan is going to work perfectly when they offer Whiteside a max contract, because I think that's the goal. But anyway, as far as, you know, leadership is concerned, you brought it up earlier, you know, how has the climate changed a little bit? I think you'd have to admit that LeBron was the very vocal leader of the team over the last couple of years, and now you have, you know, Bosch and Wade that aren't necessarily rah-rah type guys. Are they a different style of leader? Are they still an effective type of leader? Because they just, you know, you see these games where they've struggled in the third quarter, and you would think it's guys like Bosch and Wade as the de facto leadership of this team, and it would be up to them to kind of rally the troops, so to speak, and get everybody fired up and to play a different style of basketball. What's the overall attitude there as far as leadership is concerned? Is it lacking, or is it just different? You know, what would you say?
Yeah, I don't know if it's lacking, but it's definitely different.
Yeah.
I remember going to practices before LeBron James came, and it's similar to how it is now. I mean, you still have the leaders in Wade and Haslam that has remains unchanged, and you still have the core up top with Spoelstra and Riley there. I mean, it's a stable organization, so it's not like everything has changed from one season to the next. So I still think, you know, yes, James did leave, and that leaves a huge hole in the team. But it's not, you know, it's not that much different than how it was before, because even back then there was a lot of different voices in the locker room. You had somebody like Shane Battier and Ray Allen and. Then you had, you know, maybe more quiet guys like Rashard Lewis. So it still feels kind of the same way. There's more younger players now, and they do different things. You see them sometimes working on their own. But I don't see some, you know, overall profound difference just because of one player. As big of an impact he is, and just the whole dynamic of the team, how you feel it and how you perceive it, from the limited amount of time that the press have, there is a bit of a difference, but I wouldn't pinpoint that as being the main reason for the slow start to the season.
Okay.
12 weeks now to go until the playoffs. Where will we be? Where do we think at this stage? before we wrap up, we've jumped up to seventh now, so that's something. but we do, you know, Pistons and Hornets, and Pace is kind of just lingering very, very close behind.
Yeah,
those are the teams that are going to be fighting with the Heat for the one of those lower level seeds, because I don't see it changing up top. With the Hawks, they're just too strong. You got the Bulls that are they're gonna fight for home court advantage at least into the second round. You have the Raptors as well that really haven't missed a beat with DeMar DeRozan out, so they're gonna get him back in. They're gonna be they look good for the second half of the season, and you've got the Wizards too. John Wall's playing very good. Bradley Beal as well. Those are just strong teams that have depth too. And then you have this huge wild card with the Cleveland Cavaliers. You don't know really how they're going to end up. You don't see them missing the playoffs. I don't think either one of you do. I just think with LeBron James there, they're guaranteed at least be 500, and that's been enough to make it to the playoffs. And I think they might get the 4 or 5 seed. So you're looking at, you know, just a few spots left for the Heat to snag one of them. And then you have teams on the rise like the Pistons that I don't think anybody saw that happening. And you also have a team like the Indiana Pacers. I mean, they've obviously lost Paul George, but they also haven't been able to play a whole lot with George Hill or with David West. So there's a lot of teams that are on that bubble that could rise. So could the Heat, or they could, you know, they could implode. Some teams like the Charlotte Hornets, they're very inconsistent, and we've seen that obviously with the Heat as well. So it'll be very interesting.
Okay. Thank you so much, Sharia, for taking the time to talk to your writers today. It was good.
yeah, it was good to be on.
And David, you can find all of Sharia's coverage of Miami Heat on foxsportsflorida.com. He's the editor of hothoops.com. Find all your coverage for everything on both of those websites. Don't go to any others. Thank you, Sharia. Thank you, David. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
All right, bye.